Welcome to another episode of our NCLEX review series. In this podcast, we continue to bring you valuable materials to help you prepare for your exam. Enjoy.
Fluid and electrolyte balance. Fluid balance is a process of equilibrium between body compartments. Maintenance of balance is assisted by the renal and pulmonary systems. Despite the presence of illness, the body is efficient at maintaining this balance until physiological coping mechanisms are exhausted. Water is the single largest component in the body. The average adult body consists of about 40 liters of water, comprising 60% of the body's weight. Content varies with age and may be as high as 80% in infants and as low as 40% in older adults. The volume of fluid in different compartments remains relatively constant. There are two major components. The intracellular fluid, ICF compartment, accounts for 2/3 of fluid, and the extracellular fluid, ECF compartment, accounts for 1/3 of fluid. The extracellular fluid compartment is comprised of the interstitial compartment, approximately 10 to 12 liters, the intravascular compartment, approximately 3 liters, the plasma, and small fluid compartments, approximately 1 liter, including serous, cerebrospinal, pleural, synovial fluid, aqueous humor, and lymphatic channels. Sodium is the most abundant cation in extracellular fluid. The action potential of nervous and muscle fibers requires sodium, and therefore it is basic to communication between nerves and muscles. Foods high in sodium include celery, processed foods, snack foods, condiments, smoked meats, and cheese. Potassium is the most abundant cation of intracellular fluid. If potassium concentration of extracellular fluid increases, hyperkalemia, the force of cardiac contractions weakens, and with extremely high concentrations, the heart will not contract. If potassium concentration of extracellular fluid decreases, hypokalemia, the resting polarization in nerve and muscle fibers increases, resulting in weakness, eventual paralysis, and a flattened T wave on the ECG. Foods high in potassium include bananas, avocados, oranges, dates, apricots, cantaloupe, potatoes, and raisins. Calcium is required for functioning of nerves and muscles. If calcium concentration increases, hypercalcemia, the nervous system becomes depressed and sluggish. And if calcium concentration decreases, hypocalcemia, the nervous system becomes extremely excitable, resulting in cramps and tetany. Calcium is required for blood clotting, acting as a cofactor in the formation of prothrombin activator and thrombin. Foods high in calcium include milk, dairy products, canned fish with bones, whole grains, legumes, and leafy green vegetables. Nursing care of clients with fluid and electrolyte problems. Assessment and analysis. The nursing history should include observation of possible causes of fluid volume imbalance. Extracellular fluid volume deficits etiologies include decreased fluid intake, prolonged fever, vomiting, excessive use of diuretics, diabetes insipidus, and acute hemorrhage. Signs and symptoms include increased thirst, dry skin and mucous membranes, increased temperature, flushed skin, rapid thready pulse, decreased blood pressure, BP, and increased hematocrit, sodium, blood urea nitrogen, and specific gravity. Extracellular fluid volume excess etiologies include heart failure, liver disease, malnutrition leading to decreased plasma protein, renal disease, and excessive parenteral fluids. Symptoms include weight gain, crackles in the lung, edema, pitting, ascites, confusion, weakness, increased blood pressure, bounding pulse, distended neck veins, and decreased hematocrit. A variety of specific electrolyte disorders can occur. Potassium excess, hyperkalemia, occurs when the serum potassium level is more than 5.0 milliequivalents per liter. Etiologies include advanced kidney disease, severe burns or tissue trauma, excessive dosages of potassium, decreased aldosterone, and the use of potassium-sparing diuretics such as spironolactone, aldactone. Signs and symptoms of hyperkalemia include cardiac irregularities, weakness, diarrhea, nausea, and irritability. Potassium deficit, hypokalemia, occurs when the serum potassium level is less than 3.5 milliequivalents per liter. Etiologies include diarrhea, vomiting, diabetic acidosis, potassium-depleting diuretics, or loop diuretics such as furosemide, Lasix, or thiazide, HCTZ, inadequate intake of potassium, or excess aldosterone. Signs and symptoms include loss of muscle tone, cardiac dysrhythmias, abdominal distension, and vomiting. Sodium deficit, hyponatremia, occurs when the serum sodium level is less than 135 milliequivalents per liter. Etiologies include administration of electrolyte-free IV fluids, diarrhea, gastrointestinal, GI suction, or excessive perspiration followed by increased water intake. Signs and symptoms include oliguria, decreased specific gravity, and seizures. Sodium excess, hypernatremia, occurs when the serum sodium level is more than 145 milliequivalents per liter. Etiologies include diabetes insipidus, excess sodium chloride, IV fluid intake, watery diarrhea, water deprivation, and insensible fluid loss. Signs and symptoms include dry, sticky mucous membranes, oliguria, firm tissue turgor, dry tongue, increased specific gravity, and weakness. Calcium deficit, hypocalcemia, occurs when the serum calcium level is less than 4.5 milligrams per deciliter, ionized, and below 8.5 milligrams per deciliter total. Etiologies include removal of parathyroid glands, which may occur during a thyroidectomy, administration of electrolyte-free solutions, alkalosis, and acute pancreatitis. Signs and symptoms include tingling of extremities, tetany, cramps, seizures, hyperactive deep tendon reflexes, and positive Chvostek and Trousseau's signs. Calcium excess, hypercalcemia, occurs when the serum calcium level is more than 5.5 milligrams per deciliter ionized and greater than 10.5 milligrams per deciliter total. Etiologies include hyperparathyroidism, prolonged immobility, bone cancer, and excessive intake of calcium or vitamin D. Signs or symptoms include flank pain, often associated with calcium-containing renal calculi, deep bone pain, relaxed muscles, decreased deep tendon reflexes, and constipation. General assessment should include vital signs, evaluation of skin turgor, temperature, breath sounds, daily weights, intake and output, abdominal girth measurement, degree of pitting, changes in behavior, energy level, and level of consciousness. Laboratory tests should include urine-specific gravity, serum pH and arterial blood gases, serum electrolytes, hematocrit, BUN, and creatinine clearance. Planning and implementation. Fluids may be encouraged to correct a fluid volume deficit, usually 3,000 milliliters per day, or may be restricted to prevent fluid volume excess. On some occasions, restriction may be 750 milliliters or less per day. Careful planning includes restriction of fluids during meals and limiting fluids during periods of the day. Nutritional intake can be increased or restricted to correct electrolyte disturbances, such as sodium, potassium, and calcium. The nurse should monitor intake and output, I&O, closely, and weigh the client daily at the same time, on the same scale, and wearing the same amount of clothing. Intravenous therapy includes the following fluid types: dextrose in water, which provides fluid and limited calories, 1 liter of 5% dextrose equals 170 calories, dextrose in sodium chloride, which corrects fluid loss from excessive perspiration or vomiting and prevents alkalosis, Ringer's solution, which contains sodium, chloride, potassium, and calcium, and helps correct dehydration from vomiting, diarrhea, or inadequate intake, lactated Ringer's solution, which contains sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, and lactate, and helps correct extracellular fluid shifts and moderate metabolic acidosis, plasma expanders such as albumin, plasma or plasma protein fraction, plasminate, dextran, Gentran 40, and hetastarch, Hespan, which increase blood volume in clients with burns or traumatic injuries. Each of these should be administered slowly. The client should be monitored for complications of fluid replacement, which include infiltration, phlebitis, circulatory overload, or infection. Infiltration occurs when the IV catheter is displaced, allowing fluid to leak into tissues. The insertion site is pale, cool, and edematous, and the flow rate decreases. The IV must be removed and restarted in a new site. Phlebitis occurs when the vein is irritated by the catheter or medications. The insertion site is red, painful, and warm, and the flow rate is decreased. The IV must be removed and restarted in a new site. Warm compresses may be ordered to be applied to reduce local inflammation. Circulatory overload occurs when the intravenous flow rate exceeds the cardiovascular system's capability to adjust to the increased fluid volume. The client exhibits dyspnea, crackles, distended neck veins, and an increased blood pressure. The IV rate should be decreased to keep the vein open. The healthcare provider must be notified and diuretics administered as prescribed. Intervention aimed at preventing infection is to change the solution bag every 24 hours because risk for contamination is increased after this time. The frequency of tubing and site change is based on agency policy, usually every 3 days. If the client does develop an infection, the client will exhibit signs of inflammation at the insertion site, lymphatic streaking, and fever. Treatment for fluid volume excess includes administration of diuretics such as thiazide, potassium-sparing, loop, or osmotic diuretics. When electrolyte levels are reduced, such as with hypokalemia and hypocalcemia, the client will receive parenteral or oral electrolyte supplements, for example, sodium chloride, potassium chloride, calcium gluconate, and be encouraged to increase the dietary intake of foods high in the electrolyte. In specific situations of excess, such as hyperkalemia, serum potassium is reduced by the administration of medications such as sodium polystyrene sulfonate, K-exalate, or the administration of insulin to carry potassium into the cells. For the client with hypercalcemia, weight-bearing exercises are indicated. For hypocalcemia, diet, oral, or parenteral calcium replacement may be indicated. Evaluation and outcomes. Outcomes for the client experiencing fluid and electrolyte imbalance are maintaining fluid balance, equality of intake and output, serum electrolyte levels within expected range, and vital signs within expected range. Now we'll practice an NCLEX-style question. What client findings indicate to the nurse that the administration of sodium polystyrene sulfonate, K-exalate, has been effective? 1. Sodium of 143 milliequivalents per liter. 2. Potassium of 4.8 milliequivalents per liter. 3. Negative Chvostek sign. Or 4. Deep tendon reflexes at 1+. The correct answer is 2. A potassium level within the expected limits of 3.5 to 5.3 milliequivalents per liter indicates that the drug has been effective. K-exalate, a cation exchange resin, is prescribed to decrease serum potassium levels. The drug does not affect sodium or calcium levels. Deep tendon reflexes may indicate an improved potassium level, but at 1+, the reflexes are hypoactive and do not indicate a therapeutic response. Let's try another practice question. A nurse is assessing a client who had a thyroidectomy 24 hours ago. The nurse identifies a positive Chvostek sign, and the client complains of numbness of the fingers. What does the nurse suspect the client is experiencing? 1. Hypokalemia. 2. Hypocalcemia. 3. Hypernatremia. Or 4. Hypomagnesemia. The correct answer is 2. The clinical manifestations are indicative of hypocalcemia. Hypokalemia, hypernatremia, and hypomagnesemia do not cause muscle cramping or paresthesia.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others and leave a rating. We wish you all the best in the coming examination. See you next time.